Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1074. Fakebook. Walking the snake on the Earth Island with Facebook, subtitled Fastest Book Part 2, and In Your Facebook Part 4. This is being recorded on June 4th of the year 2019. This program is going to be not only updating the outright fascist manifestations of Facebook, but in particular will be something of a confirmed or an affirmation of what I spoke about in For the Record 1071. The title of this book and the title of For the Record 1071, as well as many other shows when I talk about walking the snake, it is a reference to the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, which I have spoken about for quite some time. It is ostensibly just a novel about the SS going underground, which they did, building up their economic muscle, which they did, buying into the opinion-forming media, which they have done, and following a series of terrorist incidents on the U.S. involving WMDs. Martial law is declared, and the Nazi SS, some generations on, who have infiltrated the military, take over. Key to this is, again, the SS, the Underground Reich, formed as part of the Christian West, as I spoke about in the For the Record 1058, 59, 60, and again in For the Record 1072. The Christian West became a reality. That was the fusing or the forging of the Third Reich, albeit in an underground manifestation, with the power structures, economic, political, and military, of the Western allies, the U.S. in particular. Following their manipulation of the opinion-forming media to portray Hitler out to be a good guy and the Nazis out to be a good guy and the allies, the Jews in particular, being the bad guys, the Nazis not only take over but completely revise history in a self-serving fashion. And For the Record 1071, I noted how in both India and Ukraine, both key elements of the Earth Island, as I have spoken about, the Earth Island being that stretch of landmass going all the way from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Spain, across Europe, across the Balkans, across Eastern Europe, the former Soviet Union, Russia in particular, China, India. That Earth Island, or World Island, as geopoliticians have termed it, has most of the world's landmass. It has most of the world's population. It has most of the world's mineral resources, including and especially petroleum. There's also a stretch of Muslim population across the middle of it, hence the affinity between Western corporations and the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization that spawned Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and other organizations as well, including ISIS. The aforementioned For the Record 1071 spoke about or analyzed, among other things, not only Serpent's Walk, but the revision of history in both Ukraine and in India along a pro-Axis, pro-Nazi theme. I also noted that Pierre Omidyar of Intercept fame, somebody who became something of a hero to the so-called progressive sector following Eddie the Friendly Spook's purloining of the NSA files, and the work of Glenn Greenwald, basically little more than a Nazi attorney, who has spent much of his professional life representing Nazi killers and running interference for the leaderless resistance strategy. He became one of the keepers of the NSA's files, working with Pierre Omidyar, who created The Intercept. We have taken a look at Ukraine and the beginning of the new Cold War. Bear in mind that Pierre Omidyar was not only instrumental in helping to finance the rise of Narendra Modi and his BJP fascists, now merged with the Bozian fascists that I spoke about, and for the record, 1070 and 1071, among other shows. But Pierre Omidyar also helped to bring the OUNB successor organizations to power in Ukraine. In that regard, he worked both with the Agency for International Development and with the National Endowment for Democracy, both of them basically often functioning as cat's paws for U.S. intelligence abroad, in particular in connection with the color revolutions. What we're going to be looking at in this program is the role of Facebook, or fake book, as we are calling it here, in spreading fake news both in India and in Ukraine, although in Ukraine there is a remarkable dynamic where the fake news coming from the OUNB successor organizations like Svoboda, Pravi Sektor et al., the Azov movement or Azov milieu, that is being presented as truth, whereas the myth about Russian interference in our elections, in particular the profile hacks, has been spread by those very same elements. Putin, of course, was sympathetic to the idea of Trump becoming president simply because Trump said he was going to establish better relations with Russia. In fact, he has done anything but that. However, the high-profile hacks and the frankly, ludicrous notion that Facebook was a vehicle for swinging of the U.S. election. The number of Russian posts in Facebook or Russian articles in Facebook was something like, in the relevant period, 1/415,000th of 1%. And that leaves out the fact that not all of those, or even most of those, are from the Russian government, maybe none of them from the Russian government, and also leaves out the fact that there are a lot of people who don't use Facebook, although many people do. But again, the notion that Facebook was involved in swinging the 2016 election, when in the relevant period there was 1/415,000th of 1% of the total Facebook posts coming from Russia. However, that did not stop elements like the Atlantic Council, Alexandra Chalupa, and some of the people we spoke about in the For the Record 943, in turn embellishing the high-profile hacks, which none of which has any credible evidentiary tributary leading back to Russia. Those are crude cyber false flag operations, and one can do a very effective cyber false flag operation, but those are relatively crude, and at least some of them, the ones associated with Emmanuel Macron's re-election campaign in France, can be traced to Andrew Auernheimer, a.k.a. Weave, the web architect for the Daily Stormer, and a guest at Laura Poitras and Glenn Greenwald's party to celebrate their receipt of the Polk Award for Investigative Journalism. As we are going to look at in this program, not only has Facebook been working directly with the BJP, of Narendra Modi in India, but they have been working with BJP ostensibly to weed out fake news, and yet the BJP, as we will see, is the main purveyor of fake news and the main beneficiary of fake news in India. By the same token, Facebook has appointed a woman named Katerina, K-A-T-E-R-Y-N-A, Crook, K-R-U-K, to help with the managing of Russian disinformation for Ukraine. In other words, the Facebook person who is going to be counteracting fake news for Ukraine, read anything coming from Russia, is a woman named Katerina Crook, who not only has very strong connections to the Atlantic Council, to people like Alexander Chalupa, but she also was an activist for Svoboda, one of the OUNB successor organizations that came to power as a result of the Maidan coup. And she also tweeted after a bunch of anti-OUNB protesters were burned to death in a union hall in Odessa in the spring of 2014. She tweeted out a tweet, obviously, celebrating that fiery massacre. And this is the person who is going to be counteracting, quote, fake news, unquote, for Facebook. In other words, in Ukraine and India, where fascist elements were brought to power, courtesy in no small measure of Pierre Omidyar, Facebook, or fake book, or fascist book, as I call it, has appointed as using BJP people to counteract, quote, fake news, unquote, in India, the Hindutva fascists who are themselves the greatest beneficiary of that fake news. And in Ukraine, they have appointed Katerina Crook, who is part and parcel to the OUNB successor organizations, also brought to power in no small measure because of Pierre Omidyar. We could actually call this program Fake Book. In fact, I think I'll amend the title slightly, Fake Book. Walking the Snake on the Earth Island with Facebook and Pierre Omidyar, subtitled Fascist Book, Part 2, and In Your Facebook, Part 4. This is a supplement to For the Record 718, 946, and I think also 1,021. We've also talked about Facebook at great length in 1,039. We are going to set some of the broader historical context of this when I talk about the very important book by Yasha Levine called Surveillance Valley.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
And again, we're going to begin with India, where this supplements For the Record 1,071. Bear in mind the position of Ukraine and India on the Faroe Island. They basically are flanking Russia and China, two of the major focal points of covert operation and also propaganda in the U.S. and elsewhere. Of fake news and how much it is affecting Indian life. And from the New York Times of April 29th of 2019 by Samir, S-A-M-I-R, Patil, P-A-T-I-L, India has a public health crisis. It's called fake news. And after talking about the extraordinary number of people in India who use various social media, I'm talking about the contagion. This contagion of a staggering amount of morphed images, doctored videos, and text messages is spread largely through messaging services and influencing what India's voters watch and read on their smartphones. A recent study by Microsoft found that over 64% of Indians encounter fake news online, the highest reported among the 22 countries surveyed. been talking about the various platforms and skipping down again. These platforms are filled with fake news and disinformation aimed at influencing political choices during the Indian elections. Some of the egregious instances are a made-up BBC survey predicting victory for the governing BJP, and a fake video of the opposition Congress Party President Rahul Gandhi saying a machine can convert potatoes into gold. Fake stories are spread by legions of online trolls and unsuspecting users with dangerous impact. A rumor spread through social media about child kidnappers arriving in various parts of India, and that led to 33 deaths in 69 incidents of mob violence since 2017. 6 months before the 2014 general elections in India, 62 people were killed in sectarian violence, and 50,000 were dispatched from their homes in the northern state of Uttar Pradesh. Investigations by the police found that a fake video was shared on WhatsApp to whip up sectarian passions. In the lead-up to the elections, the Indian government summoned the top executives of Facebook and Twitter to discuss the crisis of coordinated misinformation, fake news, and political bias on their platforms. In March, Joel Kaplan, Facebook's global vice president for public policy, was called to appear before a committee of 31 members of the Indian Parliament, who were mostly from the ruling BJP, to discuss, quote, safeguarding citizens' rights on social media online news platforms. One more time. In March, that's of 2019, Joel Kaplan, Facebook's global vice president for public policy, was called to appear before a committee of 31 members of the Indian Parliament, who are mostly from the ruling BJP, to discuss, quote, safeguarding citizens' rights on social and online news media platforms. The hearing was an exercise in absurdist theater because the governing BJP has been the chief beneficiary of divisive content that reaches millions because of the way social media algorithms, especially Facebook, amplify engaging, unquote, articles. As elsewhere in the world, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube are ambivalent about tackling the problem head-on for the fear of making decisions that invoke the wrath of national political forces. The tightrope walk was evident when in April Facebook announced a ban on about 1,000 fake news pages targeting India. They included pages directly associated with political parties. Facebook announced that a majority of the pages were associated with the opposition Indian National Congress Party, but it merely named the technology company associated with the governing BJP pages. Many news reports later pointed out that the pages related to the BJP that were removed were far more consequential and reached millions. Asking the social media platforms to fix the crisis is a deeply flawed approach because most of the disinformation is shared in a decentralized manner through messaging. Seeking to monitor those messages is a step toward accepting mass surveillance. The Indian government loves that idea and has proposed laws that, among other things, would break end-to-end encryption and obtain user data without a court order. The idea of more effective fact-checking has come up often in the debates around India's disinformation contagion, but it comes with many conceptual difficulties. A large proportion of messages shared on social networks in India have little to do with verifiable facts and peddle prejudiced opinions. Facebook India has a small 11 to 22 member fact-checking team for content related to Indian elections. More about who Facebook has in India later, actually in our next story. Fake news is not a technological or scientific problem with a quick fix to solve it. It should be treated as a new kind of public health crisis in all its social and human complexity. The answer might lie in looking back at how we respond to the epidemics, the infectious diseases in the early 19th and 20th centuries, which have similar characteristics. Again, note that fake news is having a huge effect in India, and we are going to see just how closely Facebook, as this article points out, the absurdity of the BJP talking about how the fake news, how we have to do something about fake news. This article, again, excerpting. The hearing was an exercise in absurdist theater because the governing BJP has been the chief beneficiary of divisive content that reaches millions because of the way social media algorithms, especially Facebook, amplify, quote, engaging, unquote, articles. Now, just how closely Facebook and the BJP are can be gleaned from the following. This is from the scroll.in blog of May 6th of 2019. By Cyril Sam and Paranjoy Guha Thakurta, T-H-A-K-U-R-T-A. Meet the advisors who helped make the BJP a social media powerhouse of data and propaganda. Note here the fusing of the BJP with Facebook. And we're going to look at something similar in Ukraine in just a minute. Bear in mind again that Pierre Omidyar helped to bring the BJP to power in India, did the same thing with the OUMB successor organizations in Ukraine, and it worked with both AIB and NED in that regard. And as we are going to see, a woman named Katharina Crook, part and parcel of the OUMB successor organization Milieu, controlling the national security establishment in Ukraine. She is going to be the new maven or maves, the new person Facebook is going to rely on to make sure there is no disinformation in Ukraine coming out of Russia. It is, of course, a very good way to make sure that there will be lots of disinformation coming out of Ukraine about Russia, and it will be amplified by the U.S. media. For the record, 946 goes into that at some length. 943, rather. And again, meet the advisors who helped make the BJP a social media powerhouse of data and propaganda. By the time Rajesh Jain, J-A-I-N, was scaling up his operations in 2013, the BJP's information technology strategists had begun interacting with social media platforms like Facebook and its partner WhatsApp. If supporters of the BJP are to be believed, the party was better than others in utilizing the micro-targeting potential of these platforms. However, it is also true that Facebook's employees in India conducted training workshops to help the members of the BJP's IP cell. Recall, too, that the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft and the Indian-German Business Roundtable, both of them headed up by Sumar Kalia Bose, the grandnephew of Subhas Chandra Bose, that is one of the driving forces helping to place Germans in the booming Indian IT sector. And the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft, founded in Hamburg in 1942 by Subhas Chandra Bose himself. And bear in mind that there is a strong Indian fascist link to the so-called progressive sector in this country, specifically to the, quote, socialists, unquote, like Bernie Sanders, and AOC. One of the top people in Sanders' retinue is a woman named Tulsi Gabbard, a Hindutva fascist, very close to Modi's BJP, sits on the board of a Koch brothers think tank, and she is a member of the fascist Hare Krishna cult. And the driving force behind AOC, Sekhar Chakraborty, is a devotee of Subhas Chandra Bose. We've spoken about that at great length. Again, back to this story from Scroll In about BJP and social media. Helping party functionaries were advertising honchos like Sejan Raj Kurup, founder of Creative Land Asia, and Pravab Kakkar, the well-known advertising professional. Actor Anupam Kher became the public face of some of the advertising campaigns. Also assisting the social media and online teams to build a larger-than-life image for Modi before the 2014 elections was a team led by his right-hand man, Dr. Hiren, H-I-R-E-N, Joshi, J-O-S-H-I, who has already stated as a very important advisor to Modi, whose writ extends way beyond information technology and social media. Currently officer on special duty in the Prime Minister's office, he is assisted by two professional techies, Nirav Shah and Yash Rajiv Gandhi. Joshi has had and continues to have a close and long-standing association with Facebook's senior employees in India. In 2013, one of his important collaborators was Akhilesh Mishra, who later went on to serve as a director of the Indian government's website, MyGovIndia, which at present is led by Arvind Gupta, who was earlier head of the BJP's IT cell. One more time, currently officer on special duty in the Prime Minister's office. This, again, is Mr. Hiren Joshi. Currently officer on special duty in the Prime Minister's office. He is assisted by two young professional techies, Nirav Shah and Yash Rajiv Gandhi. Joshi has had and continues to have a close and long-standing association with Facebook's senior employees in India. In 2013, one of his most important collaborators was Akhilesh Mishra, who later went on to serve as director of the Indian government's website, MyGovIndia, which is at present led by Arvind Gupta, who was earlier head of the BJP's IT cell. Mishra is CEO of Bluecraft Digital Foundation. The foundation has been linked to a disinformation website titled The True Picture, unquote, has published books authored by Prime Minister Narendra Modi, and produces campaign videos for Namo Television, that's capital N-A, capital M-O Television, a 24-hour television channel dedicated to promoting Modi. The 2014 Modi pre-election campaign was inspired by the 2012 campaign to elect President Barack Obama as, quote, the world's first Facebook president. Some of the managers of the Modi campaign, like Jane, were apparently inspired by Sasha Isserberg's book on the topic, The Victory Lab, The Secret Science of Winning Campaigns. In the first data-led election in India in 2014, information was collected from every possible source to not just micro-target users, but also fine-tune messages praising and mythologizing Modi as the great leader, with a capital G and capital L, who would usher in Akhedin for the country. Four teams spearheaded this campaign. The first team was led by Mumbai-based Jain, who funded part of the communication campaign and also oversaw voter data analysis. He was helped by Sashi Shekhar Vempati in running MITI and Mission 272+. As already mentioned, Shekhar had worked in Infosys and is at present the head of the Prasar Bharati Corporation, which runs Doordarshan, and All India Radio. The second team was led by political strategist Prashant, P-R-A-S-H-A-N-T, Kishore, K-I-S-H-O-R, I'm probably butchering many of these Indian names, and his IPAC, or Indian Political Action Committee, who supervised the three-dimensional projection program for Modi, besides programs like Run for Unity, Chai Pe Karcha, or Discussions Over Tea, Montan, and Citizens for Accountable Governance. Beautiful title, that one. How ironic. That roped in management graduates to garner support for Modi at large gatherings. Having worked across the political spectrum and opportunistically switched affiliation to those who backed and paid him, 41-year-old Kishore, K-I-S-H-O-R, is currently the second in command in Janata Dal, headed by Bihar Chief Minister Nitish Kumar. The third team that was intensely focused on building Modi's personal image was headed by Hiran Joshi himself, who worked very closely with Facebook, who worked out of the then Gujarat Chief Minister's office in Gandhinagar. G-A-N-D-H-I-N-A-G-A-R. Note this. The members of this team worked closely with staffers of Facebook in India, more than one of our sources told us. As will be detailed later, Shivnath Tukral, T-H-U-K-R-A-L, who is currently an important executive in Facebook, worked with this team. We made a number of telephone calls to Joshi's office in New Delhi's South Block, seeking a meeting with him, and also sent an email message requesting an interview, but he did not respond. Again, note, but Shivnath Tukral, S-H-I-V-N-A-T-H-U-K-R-A-L, an important Facebook executive in India, worked hand in glove with Hiran Joshi of the BJP, who also was very close to Facebook in India. Continuing, the fourth team was led by Arvind, A-R-V-I-N-D, Gupta, G-U-P-T-A, the current CEO of MyGov.in, a social media platform run by the government of India. He ran the BJP's campaign based out of New Delhi. When contacted, he too declined to speak on the record, saying he is now with the government and not a representative of the BJP. He suggested we contact Amit Malviya, who is the present head of the BJP's IT cell. He came online, but declined to speak specifically on the BJP's relationship with Facebook and WhatsApp. The four teams worked separately. It was like a relay race, said Vineet Genka, who was then the national co-inventor of the BJP's IT cell, adding, quote, the only knowledge that was shared among the teams was on a need-to-know basis. That's how any sensible organization works. And the article goes on to fill in information about how these teams help to bring Narendra Modi to power. And again, a lot of the mythologizing of Narendra Modi comes from social media and Facebook. Do not lose sight of the Deutsche Industrie Gesellschaft and the German-Indian Business Roundtable of Soraya Kumar Bose, and also the links to both Tulsi Gabbard and Sikat Chakrabarty here in the U.S. Skipping down. At one stage in our interview with Vineet Genka that lasted over 2 hours, we asked him a pointed question. Who helped whom more, Facebook or the BJP? He smiled and said, that's a difficult question. I wonder whether the BJP helped Facebook more than Facebook helped the BJP. You could say we helped each other. Well, that's because they are very closely linked. And again, bear in mind that Pierre Omidyar helped to bring the BJP to power in India. did the same for the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine. Facebook has now appointed a woman named Katerina, K-A-T-E-R-Y-M-A, Kruk, K-R-U-K, to head up the Ukrainian Facebook platform to make sure that there is no Russian disinformation targeting Kiev. This comes as things progress or disintegrate, I would say, I will never get used to using tweets for news, but this comes from a tweet from Christopher Miller of Radio for Europe from June 3rd of 2019. Again, Katerina Kruk.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now, her LinkedIn page lists Katerina Kruk as Facebook's public policy manager for Ukraine as of May of 2019. Now, again, these come from various social media posts, so I'm going to read them. There will be links in the written description for the program. Okay, Kruk worked as an analyst and TV host for the Ukrainian anti-Russian propaganda, unquote, outfit StopFake. Now, StopFake was the creation of Irina Chalupa, who works for the Atlantic Council and the Ukrainian government and appears to be the sister of Andrea and Alexandra Chalupa, who, as I noted in For the Record 943, and in other programs, is one of the main people associated with the OUNB and UCCA lobby in the U.S., one of the people who helped to generate the whole Russiagate psyop nonsense. Not that Russiagate being a psyop is nonsense, but Russia did not interfere in our elections, and they are not responsible for Donald Trump. People like Alexandra Chalupa and the OUNB gala milieu that spawned her are responsible for what we are in today. That is the legacy of the Christian West. So now, of Facebook's public policy manager for Ukraine, works as a post for the Ukrainian anti-Russian propaganda outfit, StopFake. StopFake, the creation of Irina Chalupa, who works for the Atlantic Council. That is an organization very close to the UCCA and the OUNB successor organizations in power in Ukraine. And the Ukrainian government, she is the sister of Andrea and Alexandra Chalupa. In October of 2017, Kruk joined the Kremlin Watch team at the European Values think tank. In June of 2014, the Atlantic Council gave Kruk its Freedom Award for her communications work during the Euromaidan protests. We're going to see what she did there in just a minute. Kruk also has a number of articles on the Atlantic Council's blog. Here's a blog post from August of 2018 where she advocates for the creation of an independent Ukrainian Orthodox Church to diminish the influence of the Russian Orthodox Church. That was actually done. Keep in mind that in May of 2018, Facebook decided to effectively outsource the work of identifying propaganda and misinformation during elections to the Atlantic Council. Again, Facebook effectively outsourced the work of identifying propaganda and misinformation during elections to the Atlantic Council. So obviously by choosing someone like Katerina Kruk, that is in keeping with this. Again, note the link between Facebook and the Atlantic Council. Now, according to Kruk's LinkedIn page, she has also done extensive work for the Ukrainian government. From March of 2016 to January of 2017, she was the strategic communications manager for the Ukrainian parliament, where she was responsible for social media and international communications. From January to April 2017, she was the head of communications at the Ministry of Health. Krupp not only was a volunteer for Svoboda during the 2014 Euromaidan protests, she also openly celebrated on Twitter the May 2014 massacre in Odessa when the far right burned dozens of protesters alive. And again, Katharina Krupp was working with Svoboda during the Euromaidan protests, and in May of 2014 celebrated the burning alive of protesters in Odessa. Yasha Levine, skipping down, here's a tweet from Yasha Levine with a screenshot of Krupp's May 2nd, 2014 tweet, where she writes, quote, hashtag Odessa cleaned itself from terrorists, proud for city fighting for its identity. Glory to fallen heroes, unquote. That is what part of the salute to the OUND. And it was after this that the Atlantic Council gave her the Freedom Award. Again, bear in mind that in May of 2018, Facebook decided to effectively outsource the work of identifying propaganda and misinformation during elections to the Atlantic Council. That's basically handing things over to the driving forces behind the Euromaidan coup. Now, there is an article from The Nation magazine of January 21st of 2014 by Alec Loon, L-U-H-N, The Ukrainian Nationalism at the Heart of Euromaidan. And it's talking about some of the people and elements involved with this. This was actually before the coup in February of 2014. This was when that was brewing, skipping down in that article. For now, Svoboda and other far-right movements like Right Sector are focusing on the protest-wide demands for civic freedoms, government accountability, rather than overtly nationalist agendas. Svoboda enjoys a reputation as a party of action, responsive to citizens' problems. Noyedi cut an interview with The Nation short to help residents who came with a complaint that a developer was tearing down a fence without permission. Quote, there are people who don't support Svoboda because of some of their slogans, they're outright Nazis, but they know it's the most active political party and go to them for help, unquote, said Svoboda volunteer Katharina Krupp. Only Svoboda is helping against land seizures in Kiev. The point being that Katharina Krupp was working for Svoboda. And just some of the slogans that they had. Oleg Tiemabuk, from the same article, is infamous for a 2004 speech in which he argued that a Moscow Jewish mafia was ruling Ukraine, entered parliament for the first time in 2012. And again, note that Katharina Krupp, who was an activist for Svoboda during the Euromaidan coup, who celebrated the burning to death of protesters in Odessa in May of 2014, and who is basically part and parcel to the Atlantic Council, which was given the job of determining whether there was interference in elections. She is now the top dog, so to speak, for Facebook in Ukraine. We have spoken about the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk. That is what is going on. From the back cover, it assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, the survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and equality. Skipping down again. From a conversation between Wrench and Lessing in Serpent's Walk. Hell, if you can con Granny into buying sugar turds instead of bran farts, then why can't you swing public opinion over to a cause as vital and important as ours? In any case, we're slowly replacing those negative images with others, the good bad guy routine. What do you think of Jesse James, John Dillinger, Julius Caesar, Genghis Khan? The reality may have been rough, but there's a sort of glitter about most of those dudes. Mean honchos, but respectable. It's all how you package it. Opinion is a goddamn commodity. It works with anybody. Give it time. And again, the good bad guy routine, mean honchos, but they're respectable. In India Today, we've talked about this in For the Record 1015 and in 1070, there are links to the sources. Modi had sanctioned a book when he was head of Gujarat that spoke favorably of Hitler. In India, many have a favorable view of Hitler as far back as 2002. The Times of India reported a survey that found that 17% of Indians in of students in elite Indian colleges, quote, favored Adolf Hitler as the kind of leader India ought to have. Consider Mein Kampf, Hitler's autobiography. Reviled it might be in much of the world, but Indians buy thousands of copies of it every month. A recent paper in the journal EPW tells us there are over a dozen Indian publishers who have editions of the book on the market. And skipping down. Business students in India. What's more, there is a steady trickle of reports that say it has become a must-read for business school students in India. A management guide, much like Spencer Johnson's Who Moved My Cheese or Edward de Bono's Lateral Thinking. If this undistinguished artist could take an entire country with him, and I imagine the reasoning goes, surely his book has some lessons for future captains of industry. Now you factor into that. Facebook, one of the top people at Facebook is Peter Thiel, who doesn't think women should be allowed to vote, is explicitly opposed to democracy because he feels it's inimical to wealth creation, and one of whose chief theoretical references or mentors, so to speak, he's dead now, never directly mentored him, is a guy named Carl Schmitt, who was the Third Reich's top legal theoretician and one of the driving forces behind the Conservative Revolution in Weimar, Germany, that helped to set the stage for the rise of Nazism. There is sort of, I don't know, a complaint from The Verge of October 30th of 2018, an article by Casey, C-A-S-A-Y, Newton, why social media is friend to far-right politicians around the world. The links between social media, domestic terrorism, and the retreat from democracy. It was an awful weekend of hate-fueled violence, ugly rhetoric, and worrisome retreats from our democratic ideals. Today, I'm focused on two ways of framing what we're seeing, from the U.S. to Brazil. Neither offers any comfort. They do give helpful names to phenomena I expect will be with us for a long time. The first is stochastic, S-T-O-C-H-A-S-T-I-C, terrorism. Quote, the use of mass public communication, usually against a particular individual or a group, which incites or inspires acts of terrorism, which are statistically probable, but happen seemingly at random, unquote. I encountered the idea in a Friday thread from data scientist Emily Gorshensky, G-O-R-C-E-N-S-K-I, who used it to tie together four recent attacks. And the second concept I'm thinking about today, skipping down, is democratic recession. The idea, which is roughly a decade old, is that democracy is in retreat around the globe. And it goes on in this respect. I would submit these things are basically true. The author gives far more credence to the Russiagate nonsense than I do. But what that author is missing is what is implicit not only in the BJP and OUNB Facebook links that we've spoken about, we have spoken about through much of this program. And again, never lose sight of the Subhash Chandra and Soraya Kumar Bose links to the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft and the German Indian Business Roundtable. Their links to the Indian high-tech business, and also the many of the very important Indian fascist links to the socialists, quote-unquote, in this country that I went into in the For the Record programs 1061 through 1070, Socialists for Trump and Hitler, subtitled The Assistance.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
In the For the Record program 1039, we revisited the Cambridge Analytica scandal, and specifically what Casey Newton is talking about there is something that has been intended from the get-go with not just Facebook, but with the interests behind it. From Campaign Magazine from November 5th of 2018 by Kate McGee, M-A-G-E-E, Cambridge Analytica whistleblower Christopher Wiley, it's time to save creativity. It's time to save a whole lot more than that. With regard to Cambridge Analytica, now Christopher Wiley was one of the top people involved with research for Cambridge Analytica, and his job was to adapt the psychological warfare strategies that SCL, the parent company of Cambridge Analytica, had developed for counterinsurgency purposes on the battlefield. And again, summing up and excerpting some of this article, Wiley recounts how, as director of research at Cambridge Analytica, his original role was to determine how the company could use the information warfare techniques used by SCL, that's Sarah Clara Laura, Cambridge Analytica's parent company, and a defense contractor providing PSYOP services for the British military. Wiley's job was to adapt the psychological warfare strategies that SCL had been using on the battlefield to the online space. As Wiley put it, quote, "When you are working in information operations projects where your target is a combatant, the autonomy or agency of your targets is not your primary consideration. It is fair game to deny and manipulate information, coerce and exploit any mental vulnerabilities a person has, and to bring out the very worst characteristics in that person because they are an enemy. But if you port that over to a democratic system, if you run campaigns designed to undermine people's ability to make free choices and to understand what is real and what is not real, you are undermining democracy and treating voters in the same way you are treating terrorists," unquote. And Wiley also draws parallels between the psychological operations used on democratic audiences and the battlefield techniques used to build an insurgency. And Wiley sums this up. It starts with targeting people more prone to having erratic traits, paranoia, or conspiratorial thinking, and get them to, quote, like, unquote, a group on social media. The information that you're feeding this target audience may or may not be real. But again, you're targeting people with erratic traits, paranoia, or conspiratorial thinking, and get them to like a group on social media. The information you're feeding this target may or may not be real. And while I felt that the important thing is that it's content that they already agree with so that it feels good to see that information, unquote. Now keep in mind that one of the goals of the psychographic profiling that Cambridge Analytica engaged in was to identify traits like neuroticism. While it then goes on to describe the next step in this insurgency building technique, keep building up the interest in the social media group that you're directing this target audience toward until it hits around 1,000 to 2,000 people. Then set up a real-life event dedicated to the chosen disinformation topic in some local area and try to get as many of your target audience to show up. Even if only 5% of them show up, that's still 50 to 100 people converging on some local coffee shop or whatever. The people meet each other in real life and start talking about, quote, all these things that you've been seeing online in the depths of your den and getting angry about, unquote. This target audience starts believing that no one else is talking about this stuff because, quote, they don't want you to know what the truth is, unquote. As Wiley puts it, what started out as a fantasy online gets ported into the temporal world and becomes real to you because you see all these people around you, unquote. The point being that these psychological warfare techniques are just that. They're psychological warfare techniques developed by SCL, or certainly given momentum by SCL, the parent company of Cambridge Analytica. And then these techniques were marketed or manifested through Facebook. Facebook's psychographic profiling were used to target individual listeners, and then what was developed initially as a counterinsurgency technique was applied to electoral politics. When we get to the book Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine, we're going to take a look at how the Internet itself was part of an overlapping series of DARPA projects groups that were centered around Project Agile, that the genesis of the Internet was part of the same overlapping group of DARPA projects that gave rise to Agent Orange in Vietnam. And the purpose of the Internet, like the purpose of Agent Orange, is counterinsurgency. So when we see SCL taking the techniques that they developed on the battlefield and applying them to electoral politics, it is analogous to what we looked at, in so many different contexts, the 25-hour series of programs with Jim DiAgemio about the book Destiny Betrayed, took a look at what happens when the Christian West and its intelligence services get involved in a decisive way in the political process. The Cambridge Analytica development is very, very similar indeed. And what we are looking at in India and Ukraine, where Pierre Omidyar helped to bring to power the BJP fascists of Narendra Modi and the OUNB successor organizations of the Maidan, and where we see Facebook basically using or working directly with the BJP fascists, Hindutva fascists in India, and networking with the Atlantic Council and Kafirina Cook of the Atlantic Council and Svoboda. It is something very, very similar. And we are looking at the snake being walked in the Earth Island with Facebook, the BJP, the OUNB, the Atlantic Council, and with Pierre Omidyar. This concludes For the Record program number 1074. Fake Book. Walking the Snake on the Earth Island with Facebook at Pierre Omebjer. Subtitle Faskus Book Part 2 and In Your Facebook Part 4. This is being recorded on June 4th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.